The headlines: Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the 1979 takeover of the U.S. embassy in Tehran proved that Washington is completely vulnerable. Israeli forces kill a Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank following an alleged car ramming and stabbing attack. And also in our headlines, North Korea and its neighboring South exchange missile fire near their sea border as tensions mount following military drills by Washington and Seoul. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. This is our top story for this half hour. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says those who think the U.S. is an untouchable power are wrong. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the 1979 takeover of the U.S. embassy in Tehran proved that Washington is completely vulnerable. He noted that the history of confrontation between Iran and the U.S. dates back to the CIA-orchestrated coup in Iran in 1953. But now the American politicians are hypocritically and shamelessly claiming that they are supporters of the Iranian people. The leader said that is an outright lie. Ayatollah Khamenei pointed to the riots of the past few weeks and said a recent intelligence report showed how the enemies had been planning to instigate chaos across different cities. The leader also said a new world order is being shaped in which the U.S. is isolated and has no important position. He made the remarks in a meeting with students 2 days ahead of the anniversary of the U.S. embassy takeover in 1979. Journalist and political commentator from London, Said Mohsen Abbas, tells us why Iran's leader has pointed to the 1953 coup in Iran in his latest remarks.
So when Ayatollah Khamenei talks about that particular coup, not only is it a reminder for the Islamic Republic of Iran's own citizens that actually those who mistakenly perhaps still believe that the American dream is the Iranian dream, perhaps need to review some of their own history and to look at what were the results of that 1953 coup. First of all, 26 years of authoritarian dictatorial rule was one outlet. The other was that all of the Iranian oil industry fell into the hands of the British and Americans. Essentially, they plundered Iranian oil wealth for those decades. You saw a huge reduction of people's freedoms and other liberties. People's economic welfare was very much suppressed as well at that time. And what did the Americans get out of it? Well, they say they got the Soviet Union to not get into Iran and the oil, etc., as I pointed out. But in reality, it's important for people to remember their history, because those who forget their past cannot possibly make sense of their present.
Iran's judiciary says the government acknowledges the right to protest but does not tolerate rioting in any shape or form. According to the judiciary spokesman, individuals who spread in misinformation and stirred up unrest in Iran in the past few weeks will be punished. Masoud Setayeshi added that the judiciary will show no leniency towards those who have committed violent crimes. Still, individuals acting with no criminal intention will be forgiven. Setayeshi also pointed out that the role of certain foreign media in instigating riots should not be underestimated. Protests erupted in several Iranian cities in September after a young woman fainted at a police station and was pronounced dead in hospital days later. The protests were peaceful at first, but soon turned into riots and vandalism. Elsewhere, Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian man in the occupied city of Ramallah in the West Bank. Our correspondent, Mona Kendil, joined us earlier from that city to tell us what exactly happened.
Well, the incident happened at one of the Israeli military checkpoints west Ramallah Beitour checkpoint. It seems that a Palestinian arrived with his vehicle at one of the Israeli military checkpoints and rammed his vehicle into a group of soldiers standing at the checkpoint. There was a video published by the Israeli military claiming that it was not an incident, it was a vehicle ramming attack. There and We are speaking about a Palestinian man, an old Palestinian man. He was shot by the Israeli soldiers there, and immediately the Israeli military said that he was shot dead. We are speaking about Habes Rayyan from the village of Bedoko, 54 years old.
Israel's former prime minister is boasting a big victory as his party and its right-wing allies win just enough seats to form a narrow majority in the parliament.
To wait for final results, but one thing is already clear. Our way, the way of Likud, proved itself. I remind you that after getting 52 seats last election, we are on the brink of a very big win.
Netanyahu has thanked voters for their confidence. His bloc of four parties has taken 62 of the Knesset's 120 seats. His main opponent, Prime Minister Yair Lapid, though, is insisting that the race is not over yet. He says nothing is final until the last envelope is counted. The final result could swing as votes are being tallied and is not expected until later in the week. For years, Netanyahu has been involved in a massive corruption scandal. He's been indicted on multiple bribery and fraud charges, but he denies them all, reacting to the election results. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shtayyeh said Netanyahu's comeback shows extremism and racism are growing in the Israeli society. The situation on the Korean Peninsula appears to be growing more unstable. For the first time in decades, North and South Korea have fired missiles landing in waters off each other's coasts. The South has launched three air-to-ground missiles and closed some of its air routes off the East Coast. Hours earlier, Pyongyang fired various types of missiles, one of which landed close to South Korean waters. According to Seoul, North Korea has launched a total of 17 missiles today. It also says that Pyongyang has fired more than 100 artillery rounds into the maritime buffer zone. Separately, one of the missiles fired by Pyongyang landed outside Japan's exclusive economic zone. Both countries have reacted to the missile launches by the North.
North Korea continues to provoke tensions on the Korean Peninsula while strengthening its nuclear missile programs. This cannot be justified for any reason, and the responsibility lies entirely on the North Korean side.
We will work closely with relevant countries, including the United States and South Korea, and we are determined to firmly protect our people's lives and peaceful livelihoods. Based on this situation, we will consider all options realistically without excluding anything, including counterattack capability, and continue to work on strengthening our defense capabilities fundamentally.
China has reacted too, saying it's closely following the developments on the Korean Peninsula. The foreign ministry spokesman says Beijing hopes that all countries involved would work towards a political settlement. The U.S. and South Korea are conducting their largest ever air drills, flying hundreds of warplanes. The exercises will end on Friday, just hours ahead of its latest missile launches. Pyongyang called for a halt to the drills, calling them aggressive and provocative. From Seoul, Frank Smith explains why the sanctions against North Korea remain a core issue in resolving this conflict.
The U.S. has suggested that they would hold so-called unconditional talks with North Korea, but one of the conditions, the primary condition of any negotiations with North Korea on the part of the U.S. and South Korea, is that the sanctions, the United Nations Security Council sanctions, really led by the United States, remain in place. And those sanctions prevent North Korea really from engaging in trade with the international community. North Korea has indicated previously it wants to see those sanctions lifted. It wants to see what it sees as a hostile policy toward Pyongyang really changed. But it hasn't seen that, despite a two-year-long moratorium on North Korea long-range missile testing and nuclear testing. Those commitments on the part of North Korea really have elapsed now, especially with the turn and the hard line here with conservative President Yoon Suk-yeol in South Korea.
A man accused of breaking into U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's mansion tells police he was on a suicide mission. According to a court finding, the suspect had plans to target other California and federal politicians. 42-year-old David DePape is being held in jail without bail. The public defender has entered a not guilty plea on his behalf. He was arrested at Pelosi's San Francisco home last Friday after hitting her husband in the head with a hammer. His charges include attempted murder, assault with a deadly weapon, and burglary, among others. DePape is scheduled to return to court on Friday. Political tensions are escalating in the U.S. ahead of midterm elections. The vote scheduled for the 8th of November will decide the control of Congress. As the United States nears the national voting day, a feeling of chaos is being widely reported. A rather shocking new poll shows that 4 out of 5 people believe the country is already out of control. Rami Mazuri has more from Chicago.
The United States has entered its last week before the midterm legislative vote, and tensions are starting to escalate. The Republicans appear certain to win the lower House of Representatives and need to win only 1 of 4 now neck-and-neck races to also control the upper Senate. Some Democrats have called the polls Republican propaganda, further undermining confidence in their predictions and creating more uncertainty.
I think it should just be positive. It's very hard to decide what is the truth and what isn't. You get the one candidate, and then the next candidate says everything that the first candidate said is wrong on the commercial. We've started muting them.
Perhaps the most telling poll is one which showed that a whopping 79% of Americans believe that the country is out of control. Many say there's no lack of reasons for such a perception. The specter of a divided and thus ineffective federal government, record inflation, a prolonged drug epidemic, regular mass shootings, a likely double-dip recession, fear-mongering about war with Russia over Ukraine or with China over Taiwan, a cultural war over identity politics, and more.
Perception is reality, right? So, when we see the political attacks that have happened on both sides, it kind of gives that impression. I think the media can feed into that at times as well. I think that's a pretty accurate assessment of where we're at, unfortunately.
The recent in-home attack on the husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who holds the number 3 post in the American system, has become embroiled in salacious controversy. Similar to the Hunter Biden laptop affair in the autumn of 2020, the case is dominating the pre-vote headlines and producing partisan allegations of either misinformation or a cover-up. Since 2017, the number of investigated threats against Washington's lawmakers has tripled. Perhaps the biggest problem in the United States hasn't even occurred yet, the near certainty of disputed election results. Some tight Senate races may require runoff votes, meaning the final outcome will likely be controversial for weeks. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Colombia and Venezuela pressing the reset button on their relations, with the Colombian president paying a rare visit to Caracas. Gustavo Petro and his Venezuelan counterpart Nicolas Maduro have held their first meeting since the neighbors restored diplomatic ties after a 3-year break. The two presidents have discussed a range of issues, including trade relations. Meanwhile, Petro has called for Venezuela's reintegration into a regional human rights system and a trade alliance. The neighbors broke off diplomatic relations in 2019 over political tensions between Caracas and the previous governments in Bogota. Petro's visit is the first by a Colombian president to Venezuela in nearly a decade. Elsewhere, Brazilian truckers and protesters supporting outgoing President Jair Bolsonaro have blocked roads across the country, causing considerable fuel disruption and affecting food supply chains. Truckers started setting up roadblocks across the vast country soon after Bolsonaro's polled defeat to leftist rival Lula da Silva. Ports of grain export, meat processing plants, and slaughterhouses have been hit hard by the blockades. Many truckers benefited from lower diesel costs during the Bolsonaro administration. Bolsonaro has given a brief statement to the first since the Sunday vote. He said the protests reflected dissatisfaction with the electoral process, but noted such protests should be peaceful. The far-right president did not concede defeat, but his chief of staff said their team would begin the process of transition to a Lula government.
It was a long wait that ended in a cry of joy. Former president and left-wing candidate Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva won the second round of the Brazilian presidential election against the incumbent far-right leader Jair Bolsonaro. With 50.9% of the vote, the leader of the Workers' Party obtained a narrow victory over his opponent, who received 49.1% of the vote. The election was Brazil's most polarizing poll since its return to democracy in 1985 after a military dictatorship. It also marked the first time that the sitting president failed to win re-election. Just over 2 million votes separated the two candidates. Addressing his supporters in a speech following the announcement of his victory, the newly elected president promised to unite a divided country. The veteran leftist leader said his win is a victory for a democratic movement above the interests of parties and ideologies.
This is not my victory, nor of the Workers' Party, nor of the parties that supported me in the campaign. It is a victory of the immense democratic movement that was created beyond the political parties, individual interests and ideologies for democracy to win.
Lula made a stunning comeback while the public credited him with building an extensive social welfare program during his previous tenure in office, helping lift millions into the middle class and being in charge of a booming economy. During the election campaigns, Bolsonaro tried to shift the debate to Lula's corruption convictions in 2018, which were later overturned by the country's top court. However, he failed. Bolsonaro's popularity never exceeded 40% during his 4 years in office. He faced wide criticism over a slew of issues, including his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, inflation, and high fuel prices. He has been widely criticized by public health experts for his failure to respond to the pandemic in a timely fashion and reluctance to introduce restrictive measures in fear of damaging the economy. Just 4 out of 10 households have access to food of adequate quality and quantity. The majority, 58.7%, live with some level of food insecurity. This is equivalent to around 125 million people. Also, large-scale deforestation of the Amazon accelerated under Bolsonaro, reaching a 15-year high in 2021. In his third term, Lula has inherited a sluggish economy, tighter budget constraints, and a more hostile legislature from the country's most right-wing government in decades. Lula has vowed a return to state-driven economic growth and social policies that helped lift millions out of poverty when he governed Brazil from 2003 to 2010.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Claiming fraud in the 2020 presidential elections, former US President Donald Trump provoked his extremist and far-right supporters to attack the Capitol Hill in order to prevent the confirmation of the winning candidate, Joe Biden. This act of Donald Trump and his supporters was recorded as a big scandal in the history of America's democracy. Now, on the eve of U.S. midterm elections, and considering Trump's possible intention to run for the 2024 presidential race, most Republicans believe that he should be tried and prosecuted for inciting extremists to attack Congress on 6th of January 2021. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. Former US Vice President Mike Pence writes in a forthcoming memoir, a post-election meeting at which advisers led by Rudy Giuliani attacked campaign lawyers and urged Donald Trump not to accept his election defeat was a new low for a president well acquainted with rough and tumble of debates. Of the meeting in November of 2020, Mike Pence writes, "In the end, that day, the president made the fateful decision to put Giuliani and attorney Sidney Powell in charge of legal strategy. The seeds were being sown for a tragic day in January. By openly blaming Donald Trump for events leading to the 6th of January 2021 insurrection, when a pro-Trump mob attacked the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to overturn Joe Biden's election victory, Mike Pence risks angering Republicans he must court as he considers the next nomination for president." His memoir, So Help Me God, will be published on 15th of November. The website Axios published a short excerpt on Monday, 31st of October. Mike Pence writes, "What began as a briefing that Thursday afternoon quickly turned into a contentious back and forth between the campaign lawyers and a growing group of outside attorneys led by Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, an attorney who had represented General Mike Flynn, Donald Trump's first national security advisor, who was fired for lying to the FBI. Mike Pence further writes, "After the campaign lawyers gave a sober and somewhat pessimistic report on the state of election challenges, the outside cast of characters went on the attack. Giuliani told the president over the speakerphone, 'Your lawyers are not telling you the truth, Mr. President,' adding, 'Even in an office well acquainted with rough and tumble of debates, it was a new low and went downhill from there.' Donald Trump's culpability for the Capitol attack has been examined and presented by the House January 6th Committee and is being investigated by the U.S. Justice Department. The former president is in legal jeopardy on other fronts as well. Election subversion, the unauthorized retention of White House papers after the end of his presidency, his business affairs, and a defamation lawsuit from a writer who alleges that he abused her. Donald Trump denies wrongdoing, claiming he remains dominant in opinion polls for 2024. He is reported to be seeking campaign hires while waiting until after the midterm elections next week to make a formal announcement. Mike Pence's presidential ambition is no secret either, but although the January 6th committee has presented him as a hero for refusing to cooperate with Trump's election subversion, he has work to do if he is to persuade Republican voters that he's the man to take on Joe Biden in 2024. The U.S. newspaper The Hill has more on the same story. U.S. Republican aides and strategists expect Attorney General Merrick Garland to pursue an indictment of former President Donald Trump within 60 to 90 days after Election Day, a move that probably would end the former president's attempts to run for president in 2024. Republican aides on Capitol Hill and veteran party strategists say Merrick Garland is under heavy pressure from Democrats to act, and the deadline for pursuing an indictment is fast approaching. One veteran Republican aide said, "A couple of weeks after the election, I assume that Garland will indict Donald Trump." A second Republican aide warned an indictment could actually end up helping the former president politically. They warned that the backlash will be stronger if Merrick Garland brings an indictment once Donald Trump's expected 2024 presidential campaign is up and running. There are actually two different investigatory probes that could lead to indictments of Donald Trump. One is related to the documents taken from the White House and found at his home in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, while the other concerns the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. On 6th of January 2021, Donald Trump gave a provocative speech to his supporters refusing to concede his election loss, and the crowd proceeded to march on to Capitol Hill, breaching the perimeter, attacking security guards, and sending lawmakers running for their safety. Following the final hearing of the congressional investigation into the riot on 6th of January, the Department of Justice has been urged to bring criminal charges against Donald Trump. The second Republican aide said the decision Merrick Garland has to make is really tough, warning that any prosecution would plunge the country, which is already so divided, into a potentially precarious situation. Republican aides and strategists warn there's a risk of political violence in response to any indictment against the former president. The website of CBS News has more for us. A former Donald Trump White House lawyer said he thinks there is a very high chance that the former President Donald Trump will face an indictment. Ty Cobb, who represented the White House during former Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Donald Trump's 2016 campaign contacts with Russia, said he believes the former president is likely to face legal consequences for actions related to the 6th of January 2021 attack on the Capitol and his attempts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Ty Cobb said recently, "I think the president is in serious legal water, not so much because of the Mar-a-Lago search, but because of the obstructive activity he took in connection with the 6th of January proceeding and the attempts to interfere in the election count, particularly in Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and perhaps Michigan." According to an NBC News opinion poll, fewer U.S. Republicans than ever say they are loyal to former President Donald Trump. 33% of registered Republicans said they are a supporter of Donald Trump rather than the Republican Party, the lowest since NBC News began asking the question. The previous low was at 34% back in May of this year, while the highest was at 54% in October of 2020. 58% of those surveyed in September saw themselves as a supporter of the Republican Party rather than a supporter of Donald Trump, while 3% said that they are supporters of both Donald Trump and the Republican Party, and 4% said they support neither. The new numbers come amid concerns that Donald Trump's presence in the 2022 midterm elections, despite not being a candidate, could hurt the Republican Party in November and give Democrats a shot at keeping control of the U.S. Senate.
Hi. علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood. And we are presently focusing on the second sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam discusses about certain circumstances of the people in the society before the coming of the messengers. And he says that the situation was such that خُذِل الْإِيمَان, that Iman was left helpless. That means belief and faith in the society was not given the support required. People didn't take it seriously. And therefore its foundations were destroyed. I mean, and then people had left its flags, like the signs and flags were all left aside. No one was taking it seriously. Its paths were very, very, different. And people generally left religion, were not taking it seriously. أَطَاعُ الشَّيْطَانِ, they started to follow and obey the devil. فَسَلَكُوا مَسَالِكَهُ, and they started to follow the path, they went through the path of the devils. وَوَرَدُوا مَنَاهِلَهُ, and they entered in their final destinations. Inshallah, we'll discuss about this in the coming segment.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that, you see, people had become such that they started to believe, they started to follow and obey the devil. They didn't know, or rather knowingly or unknowingly, they didn't see this reality that when they leave faith, when they don't strengthen faith in the society, when they don't support the foundations of faith, then naturally they give the devil the chance to enter into the society. The Satan started to govern. The Satan and the devil starts to, you know, push people to a certain direction and people follow him. People started to follow him. فَسَلَكُوا مَسَالِكَهُ, they followed that exact path that the devil followed, the path of pride, the path of disobedience of God, the path of, deceit, and all of that. وَوَرِدُوا مَنَاهِلَهُ, they finally entered the final destination that the devil had in mind for the people. Bihim sarat alamuhu. Rather, the Satan, used these very people to carry his own flag. Okay? To carry his flag to the destination that he wanted. وَقَامَ لِوَاؤُهُ. And it was through these very people that his standard was raised. You know, his flag was raised by the people, by these same very people who left faith, who didn't give importance to faith and started to obey the devil. فِي فِتَنٍ دَاسَتْهُمْ بِأَخْفَافِهَا. They were in a situation whereby they were engulfed in confusions and tribulations, in the plots of the devils and in the plots of the enemies of God. They were in that situation. فِي فِتَنٍ دَاسَتْهُمْ بِأَخْفَافِهَا. They were in those difficult tests and tribulations and trials, and they were in those states of confusions, so as such that they were as if they were being stomped and stampeded upon by these tests and tribulations and confusions.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam now is explaining us about what happened when these people started to carry the flag of the devil all around, and you know, raise his standard across the nations. He says that fi fitanin da sathum bi akhfafiha, that these people were stomped upon by the feet of these wild animals, these wild devils. They were crushed. وَوَطِئَتْهُمْ بِأَظْلَافِهَا. They were being stomped upon. They were being jumped upon by these entities. وَقَامَتْ عَلَى سَنَابِكِهَا. And the devils, the satans, the enemies of God, they got hold of these people like an animal, a wild animal that, you know, traps another entity, another person in its claws, you know, like that. So they were now completely, following the exact plan that the Satan had. For whom فيها تائهون. And therefore now in all these confusions and in all of these tests and tribulations and these types of plans and plots that the enemies of God were doing for the people, what happened to these people? They now remained in a state of confusion in all of these things. For whom fiha ta'ihun. And then he goes on to say, that these people, jahilun, they were ignorant, maftunun, they were in a state where they were cheated, they were deceived, fi khayri darin wa sharri jiranin, they had the best of houses but the worst of neighbors. Houses look good from outside, but people are rotten, people are spoiled, people are wrecked and wretched. So this was the situation that Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling us of the societies before the coming of the Messenger. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
China and Russia, which previously called AUKUS, the Joint Defense Treaty between United States, Britain and Australia, as disturbing the security of the Asia-Pacific region, have once again criticized this defense treaty. Through a joint defense pact with United States and Britain, Australia is to take delivery of nuclear-powered submarines from Washington. The treaty has also increased concerns about proliferation of nuclear weapons. We now take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. China's Xinhua news agency has this. A Chinese envoy recently reiterated concerns over the nuclear weapon material transfer involved in AUKUS, the trilateral pact between United States, the United Kingdom and Australia, calling on the three countries to abandon it over nuclear proliferation risks. Wang Kun, China's permanent representative to the United Nations in Vienna, made the remark after a meeting of the International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors decided to, by consensus, to set up a formal agenda item on transfer of nuclear materials in the context of AUKUS and its safeguard in all aspects under the NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, at China's proposal. Wang Kun said, "This move foiled certain countries' attempt to hijack the IAEA Board of Governors meeting," adding that it was the fourth consecutive time that the AUKUS issue was included in the formal agenda of the agency's quarterly board meeting, reflecting the international community's concerns over the transfer of nuclear weapons materials involved in the AUKUS deal. In September of 2021, the United States, Britain and Australia announced the establishment of AUKUS, under which the US and Britain will assist Australia in acquiring nuclear-powered submarines. Wang Kun noted that the AUKUS-related nuclear material transfer is at its core an issue of nuclear proliferation. He said, AUKUS goes beyond the existing international non-proliferation regime and the mandate of the International Atomic Energy Agency Secretariat. The issue should not be handled by the three countries alone and must be handled by the IAEA member states. He added that China has always advocated discussion of the issue through an intergovernmental process, and the previous discussions at the IAEA Board of Governors meeting have helped the international community and the agency's member states to realize the severe negative impact of AUKUS, especially its proliferation risks. The Chinese envoy said the IAEA Secretariat has been providing a platform for the international community to discuss AUKUS in a fair and objective manner according to the Secretariat's mandate. The International Atomic Energy Agency Director General Rafael Grossi has recently published a report on AUKUS, marking a right step in urging the three countries to fulfill their non-proliferation obligations. Wang Kun said, however, the United States, Britain and Australia have ignored the AUKUS-related discussions at the IAEA Board of Governors meeting and in relevant intergovernmental processes, and tried to set up a separate agenda item on the issue, aiming to hijack the IAEA Secretariat to whitewash their proliferation activities and create divisions within the agency. The TASS news agency has more on this issue. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said recently the US move to create narrow pacts like AUKUS are aimed at promoting NATO's interests and nuclear activities in the Indo-Pacific region. Russia's top diplomat Sergei Lavrov pointed out, the open formats of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, that operate on the basis of a consensus and mutual respect are endangered by the activity which the United States and its closest allies are undertaking to create narrow format structures here, including military political pacts, as in the case with the so-called AUKUS trio. Also, Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu, during a security conference in Moscow, recently warned that the Australian-British-American AUKUS alliance has the potential to develop into a military political bloc cooperating with NATO and transferring joint nuclear planning and training to the region. Speaking at a security conference in Moscow, Sergei Shoigu said, the transfer of the practice of nuclear training from Europe will blow up the region, although it can be assumed that this is precisely the goal set by the United States. Moreover, Deputy Director of the Russian Foreign Ministry's Department for Non-Proliferation and Arms Control, Igor Vishnevetsky, said, US nuclear weapons should be withdrawn to US territory, their deployment infrastructure in Europe should be eliminated, and the practice of NATO joint nuclear missions should be stopped. According to Vishnevetsky, the establishment of the AUKUS bloc by United States, Britain and Australia triggers tensions in the field of international security and creates conditions for a new round of arms race in the Asia-Pacific region. According to a social media survey by CGTN.com, the official website for China Global Television Network, Over 70% of netizens from across the world believe a deal in which the United States and Britain are expected to transfer nuclear materials to Australia has violated global non-proliferation standards. The survey comes just days after the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA Board of Governors, addressed the trilateral deal upon the request of China and other IAEA member states. The deal, through which the United States and Britain are to help Australia acquire nuclear-powered submarines, involves the likely transfer of weapons-grade uranium from two nuclear-armed powers to a non-nuclear weapon state. While the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, the NPT, imposes strict restrictions upon weapons-grade uranium and has set up an international inspection body, experts say a legal loophole in the treaty allows non-nuclear weapon states to use highly enriched uranium for non-explosive military uses, such as powering submarines, while letting them escape rigorous inspections by the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, provided they make certain assurances to the agency. With concerns that the materials to be transferred to Australia could be diverted to weapons manufacturing, China has strongly opposed the submarine deal, arguing the trio has seriously compromised efforts to stop the spread of nuclear weapons. The CGTN opinion poll also showed that more than 80% of online respondents said they are very concerned that more countries will obtain nuclear capabilities if Australia uses the loophole to receive nuclear materials and nuclear submarines.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. This hadith is about the people of the right hand and the people of the left hand, the Ashabul Yameen and the Ashabul Shimal. It's a Quranic concept that has been mentioned in the Holy Quran. The Imam here, he kind of comments on this and explains what it means, he alludes to the verse in which these two, names have been mentioned. The verse in question is the following: then as for him who is given his record in his right hand, he shall soon receive an easy reckoning. The Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, verily, when Allah Blessed and Most High will wish to deal with the believer's account, He will give him His book in His right hand and will then take him to account for all that is between him and himself, and will say, my servant, you have committed such and such and have done such and such. And he will reply, yes, my Lord, I have done that. And Allah will say, I have forgiven you for them and have transformed them into good deeds. So people will ask, glory be to Allah, did this man not have a single evil deed? And this is the purport of Allah's verse. Then, as for him who is given his record in his right hand, he shall soon receive an easy reckoning, and he will return to his folks joyfully. Regarding the same subject, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, verily, when Allah Blessed and Most High wishes to requite His servant with evil as a result of his deeds, He will take him to account for them in front of everyone, and will reduce him to tears on account of the proofs against him, and will give him his book in his left hand. And this is the purport of Allah's verse. But as for him who is given his record from behind his back, he will pray for annihilation. Yad'u suburan. He will pray for his death and his destruction. And he will enter the blaze. Indeed, he used to be joyful among his folks in his life in this world. He was joyful, but this person, now that his book of deeds has been given to him from his behind his back, he will be sad and he will wish for his death and destruction. But that world and that in the hereafter, there is no death. Life is eternal, and it continues, and will never finish. So this is the explanation of these two characteristics in the hereafter, in the words of Imam Sadiq. Thank you for joining us here once again. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
This one lay.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.